The partial government shutdown is in its 12th day, and there's still no end in sight.
President Trump and congressional leaders were scheduled to meet at the White House today for what's being described as an informational session on border security, the issue at the center of the budget deadlock.
It comes on the eve of Democrats taking control of the House. Nancy Pelosi, who's expected to be the next House Speaker, says her chamber will pass its own plan to end the shutdown. But Trump has vowed to reject it if it does not contain money for a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border.
And in other news, incoming Republican Senator Mitt Romney is criticizing President Trump in an op-ed, and Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren says she's running for president in 2020. Mordecai Lee is a professor of urban planning at UW-Milwaukee, a former state lawmaker. Mordecai, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much, Rob.
Well, if you tune in the news last before the holidays, there was a government shutdown over border security. Post-election, there's a government shutdown over border security. Not a lot of movement in the last 12 days or so.
Right. The more things change, the more they stay the same. I suppose probably over the next week or so, we're going to reach some kind of a critical mass where more Americans will be inconvenienced by this. We all take it leisurely during the holidays, but now that we're all back at work, people will start noticing that the IRS, isn't answering, that the national parks are closed, that the Ice Age Trail in Wisconsin is not being staffed. So I think more and more there's going to be this sort of feedback from the grassroots about get this done.
And government employees, federal government employees, some of them not working, some of them working without a paycheck. We're seeing a federal government memo saying, here's how to barter with your landlord if you can't pay the rent this month. Talk about that. We'll maybe put some pressure on lawmakers too, right?
Let's take a comparison to the world of business, because sometimes Americans say, well, we want government to operate more like a business. Okay, fair enough. Would a business like, General Electric or Johnson Controls, would they fund themselves only until a certain time and then sort of shut down and sort of tell their employees to stay tuned? You can't run a business like this, and you can't run a government like this. You need ongoing operations. And so I really wish that things weren't quite as toxic in Washington, both on the part of the legislative branch and the part of the president. There are such obvious compromises there, right in front of their noses, but nobody seems to be able to talk to each other.
All right, we have border security, billions of dollars going into that already. The issue, the sticking point, is this thing, a wall. We want the president wants a literal wall. There's floating definitions of what that might exactly look like. Why is this one issue such a sticking point in past efforts to pass a spending bill and now with the shutdown?
Well, For President Trump, then he was the candidate for President Trump, building a wall was a kind of a signature issue. It was sort of, I'm really going to stand up against, sort of fill in the blanks, stand up against illegal immigrants, stand up against criminals who are coming over, stand up for America. Whatever it was that he was conveying, it was the symbolism of the wall that just really captured the attention of the Republican base, who voted for him in primaries over more traditional conservatives like Jeb Bush, let's say, or even Scott Walker. So it's come to a point that he's painted himself into a corner. I think, Rob, you sort of hinted where the compromise could come, that the outgoing chief of staff said, well, it doesn't have to be a physical barrier from coast to coast, from the Gulf of Mexico to San Diego. We realize that in some places it doesn't have to be a physical barrier. That, it seems to me, is where the compromise is. And right now there are some physical barriers that have been funded by Congress, Democrats and Republicans alike. So I really don't quite understand this.
Talking to Mordecai Lee from UW-Milwaukee about some of the top stories in national politics. The big one this week, the federal government partial shutdown and efforts to end that. Never ask you to predict the future, Mordecai, but do you see this thing going on a long time? It seems like both sides, President Trump wants $5 billion for the wall. Democrats want to give zero, at least in this particular spending package, for the wall. So where do we go?
Okay, Bill, I'll make a prediction, but Rob, you'll have to promise me to erase this tape if I'm wrong.
I can't promise that, but go for it.
Okay, I'm going to suggest that it's going to be over by next Monday or Tuesday.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. How do we get there?
I think it's going to be this sort of soft definition of what the funding is for, and then both sides will save face, and finally we'll get government back operating again.
And one thing that's been brought up in the past, and now Republican Senator Lindsey Graham bringing back this idea, he says, okay, Democrats fund the wall. In exchange, we'll finally do this DACA protection. People brought in the nation illegally when they were children, saying, okay, they won't be deported. We're going to lock that into law. Do you see that being part of a compromise?
That would be a wonderful compromise. In other words, everybody gets half a loaf, or everybody gets one thing and they give up one thing. You know, that's what happens on playgrounds and kindergartens. And we need some adults in Washington who understand what it is to negotiate and what it is to compromise.
All right, but for many of in the base, for President Trump, some Democrats as well, compromise isn't on the agenda. It isn't something they'll support. It's viewed as a betrayal these days in a lot of ways.
You know, Rob, I really like that observation. You really hit the nail on the head that in the old days, you know, we used to say that half a loaf was better than none. Nowadays, it's such odd math and algebra, sort of, no loaf is better than half a loaf. I mean, I don't understand. This is logic turned upside down. So sooner or later, I think we're going to reach a crisis point where both in Madison and in Washington, people are going to say, okay, we've had all our sound bites. We've had all our yelling at each other. Now let's just get this done. Let's compromise.
Democrats are saying we don't want to come to a meeting with President Trump and be lectured or have lots of false claims. The president tweeted a tweet that had the number of illegal immigrants in the country at about three times what most estimates have it at, saying that Mexico is already paying for this via this NAFTA replacement that isn't in effect yet. How do you see that playing out?
Well, I think the key is whether the meeting that they have is going to be with cameras or without cameras. You know, when there are cameras in the room, and this was even my experience when I was in the state legislature, people act differently. They act to the cameras. And there's a lot of sort of melodrama and sort of fake confrontation. If you keep the cameras out of the meeting, then they can sort of let their hair down and they can talk frankly and they can say, let's figure this out. And they won't be scoring points on whether it's Fox News or MSNBC.
You know, it's kind of weird because you think, okay, more cameras, more transparency. We don't like smoke-filled rooms and closed-door negotiations. It sounds like you're saying closed-door negotiations work better.
I know, Rob. It does sound odd to be saying that because we as Americans believe in transparency. We believe in open government. But as Americans, we also understand that when people can speak confidentially, they can say things that they otherwise would not want to say on the record. And that's how things get done in closed meetings. And so I do think that that's part of government and that we as Americans should accept that as how things work.
We're talking about the latest in national politics with Mordecai Lee from UW-Milwaukee, former state lawmaker.
You can join the conversation. What's your reaction to the government shutdown? Is President Trump right to hold out for money for the border wall, or do you agree with Democrats who don't want to add to the border security budget to build a wall? What do you want your side to do? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org.
UW-Milwaukee urban planning professor Mordecai Lee stays with us. We're talking about some of the big national political stories in the news, the big one, and we want your reaction. How are you feeling about the federal government partial shutdown? What do you think should happen, if anything, when it comes to a compromise over border wall funding? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas at WPR.org. As always, you can tweet us at Central Time WPR. To your calls now, Ruth is with us in Altoona. Hi, Ruth.
Hi. I think your representation of the standoff between the Democrats and President Trump is not a fair one, because when you say that he campaigned on this issue and people supported it, that was because he said he would have Mexico pay for it, that the American public would not pay a single penny for this wall. And so that was his promise, not to build a wall, but to build a wall and have another country pay for it. So that is not what he's able to deliver.
Thanks for the call, Ruth. Mordecai, Democrats have been bringing that point up recently.
You know, fair enough. That's it. Ruth is accurately saying what he said in his speeches. But ever since Mexico said that it would not pay for it in his rallies as president, he's still talking about building the wall. He simply no longer talks about Mexico paying for it. And he still gets, you know, a huge ovation for doing it. So I think it's still red meat politically and still effective as a promise, even though he's not talking about Mexico paying for it, but now that he's president.
Thanks for that call, Ruth. And he has mentioned a couple times that Mexico will, in fact, pay for the wall via the new, as I mentioned in a he tweeted in the new NAFTA deal. That doesn't exist yet. It has to be ratified by legislatures, and there's no provision to create a funding stream from that deal to a wall, right?
You know, the president, I hate to have to say this, but the president is an exaggerator, and the president is not hemmed in by what we would traditionally call facts. And so he sort of says things and asserts things without necessarily having factual documentation. And I think that we as Americans, we're not used to that. And we somehow have to get used to this new norm that a president does not hesitate to exaggerate about things that aren't factually accurate, and that this is just sort of the new ballgame of political rhetoric.
Let's take another call on the shutdown and border security funding. Bob is with us in Wanakee. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
What do you think?
I'm not so sure that the Democrats are going to allow Trump to be able to tout the fact that they caved in to him on the wall issue, because he will conveniently forget to mention DACA or any other compromise that they allowed and continually push the fact that he won on the wall issue. Just my thought.
Bob, thanks for the call. Mordecai, both sides looking to declare victory on whatever comes out of this.
Right. One option, following what Bob was saying, is that you could put the DACA program, creating it as a statutory program instead of as an executive order program, you could put that in the same bill that might have the funding for the wall, or the authorization for funding for the wall. So no matter what the president would say, it would still be the same signature. Now, you know, another compromise following what Bob is saying is if the president is insisting on $5 billion plus, maybe they'd compromise on $2.5 billion. Again, there's room for compromise, and no matter what the president might claim, the Democrats would be able to make their case as well.
Thanks a lot for that call, Bob. We're talking to Mordecai Lee from UW-Milwaukee about some of the top stories in national politics. Want to move on to some of the other stuff going on right now, Mordecai. We have this incoming senator from Utah, a fellow named Mitt Romney, former presidential candidate. He writes an op-ed. It's in the Washington Post. He supports President Trump on a lot of policy items, tax cuts, judge appointments, that kind of thing. But very critical of President Trump and his leadership style. How significant do you think this is?
I think it's significant in the sense that there are now two Republican parties. There's the party of President Trump and his allies in Congress who vociferously support him, as does Fox News. And then there's this sort of vestigial old Republican party of the Bushes and of the Romneys. Senator Jeff Flake, who's just stepping down because he couldn't get reelected because he was criticizing President Trump, who are saying that our Republicans need a different tone and Republicans need to communicate differently and they need to convey more efforts at unity and compromise. So I think it'll be interesting to see how Romney's career goes. In other words, is this a viable splinter group of the Republican Party? Up to now, it hasn't been, and Romney was elected to a six-year term, so he's got time to try to survive this, but I'm not really sure that there's much of that wing left in the Republican Party.
Well, Mitt Romney, as you say, he just got a six-year term, so at the most, that would be he'd be running for re-election in a year when Donald Trump would end his second term, if he has one. So he's not necessarily risk, and he's running in Utah. It's hard to imagine Mitt Romney losing a race in Utah. I don't know. He's in a pretty safe space to make comments like this.
I think so. And it's sort of the opposite of what happened to Jeff Flake in, was that Arizona? That all of a sudden the bottom dropped out, and he was going to get primaried by somebody who was a Trump supporter. And Flake, reading the polls, realized that he would get defeated in a primary and would not be able to get reelected. And so he just announced he was not going to run for another term. I think you're right, Rob, that the politics of Utah with Romney would be slightly different from that.
Is it, some people have said, okay, we've had some prominent Republicans criticize President Trump, but not necessarily take action where it counts, voting against the president's priorities, that sort of thing. What are you going to be watching for with a senator like Mitt Romney and the Senate majority?
Romney did a very interesting thing in his column where he said, I'm not going to feel obligated to respond to every single tweet and every single comment that President Trump makes that I disagree with or that's an exaggeration. But he said, but I will consistently call for changing the tone of the presidency and changing how he communicates. And so you're right, Rob, that Romney said he agreed with the tax cut. He agreed with the Supreme Court nominations. So it's not on policy, on the substance of public policy, that he's disagreeing with the president. It's how the president is so different from the norm that we expect coming out of the White House and presidents.
Let's turn to the race for president in 2020, because we're all really excited about this already, Mordecai, I know. We're watching probably a lot of Democrats are going to be in. The latest is Massachusetts U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren, widely expected that she'd get into this. She's going to be campaigning in Iowa already this weekend, of course, a state that goes to the not primary, but caucuses pretty early. Talk about Elizabeth Warren as far as policy and ideology and where she fits into the Democratic spectrum.
Well, for those of your listeners who are just sighing because it was only 2 months ago that we had the midterm elections, there's a political logic to declaring early in 2019 that you're going to run for president in 2020. And that's exactly what you said, Rob, the Iowa caucuses. And the Iowa caucuses are approximately 1 year out. And so the November election in 2020 is a long ways out, but it's only a year to that first caucus. And so if one is a candidate and you want to create a grassroots campaign, you want to recruit volunteers, you want to recruit coordinators, you want to make appearances and get commitments, 12 months is not that far out. And that's the logic of what she did. And I expect, Rob, that by the end of the month, we're going to have two or three or four more declared candidates. And I guess we're going to end up with a baker's dozen of declared candidates by the time we get around to the Iowa caucuses. And I think the more the merrier. In other words, it's sort of like 31 flavors. Let the voters decide who exactly they like more. And it could be that in a fractured caucus that a person wins a caucus with only, I don't know, let's say 30% of the vote because everybody else got less than that. But nonetheless, there will be a winnowing out, and eventually it'll narrow down to a kind of a one-on-one knockdown fight.
And where do you see Elizabeth Warren as far as strengths and weaknesses, given her one big platform she's had is consumer protections on financial for financial industries? I don't know if there's a big constituency out there that loves the big banks, so that might be good for her. How does she stand out from the expected field?
I'm not sure she stands out all that much. She's very articulate. She's very appealing to some voters. She has such an interesting background. She was involved in these financial issues around the time that even before the banks started collapsing in 07 and 08. But nonetheless, I would put her in the sort of more liberal wing of the party. She's certainly not a Clintonite. In other words, she's not triangulating for the middle. So she'll be out there competing probably less with a Bernie Sanders kind of candidate, but with more moderate liberals, some of the other Democrats, maybe Cory Booker, maybe Kamala Harris, I think they're all going to be really bunched up together as moderate liberals.
And so, Mordecai, who's going to win this thing? No, I'm just kidding. I won't ask you to do that. It's way too soon. It's too soon.
Oh, bless you.
I want to bring things home, Mordecai, in the last few minutes to here in Wisconsin. We've got Tony Evers, governor-elect, being sworn in coming up on Monday. We're hearing from outgoing Governor Scott Walker saying he's going to stay in Wisconsin, be part of a speaker's bureau, going to work with some groups and advocate and speak on conservative political messages, advocate for President Trump's reelection, among other things. Talk about the role of the ex-governor in Wisconsin. Jim Doyle and Scott McCallum, usually pretty quiet, except toward the end of last year, criticizing the changes in this lame duck session. Tommy Thompson had a post-governor career, of course, in the cabinet, running for U.S. Senate. What do you see Governor Walker doing as ex-Governor Walker now?
I think Governor Walker is probably going to be a little bit like the former sheriff of Milwaukee County, Mr. Clark, that he's a national figure and he does traveling, he gives speeches, he gets interviewed on Fox News, and that's a livelihood, that's a profession, that's an activity. So I think it's pretty clear about that. In terms of his involvement in Madison area politics in the state capitol, Towards the end of his second term, I think we were hearing voices from the State Assembly Republican caucus and the State Senate Republican caucus that sometimes they disagreed with Governor Walker, but sort of for the sake of party unity and solidarity, they would support him. I think we're going to be seeing them sort of declaring independence and being much more autonomous, and that his ability to influence the outcomes within the state legislature, I think, are going to be quite limited. Now, I've got to put in a plug, because I'm a professor, that we all know that Scott Walker never finished his college degree, his baccalaureate degree. I'm going to kibitz from the sidelines that I urge him to go back to school, get a degree, you know, maybe get a business administration degree, that I think he would find it very, very helpful for his future career.
And let's turn toward the future now. We'll have Governor-elect Tony Evers, a Democrat, with this still Republican-controlled legislature. In our last minute or so, Mordecai, do you see room for getting stuff done?
Well, you know, at the top of the news, he threatened that he would veto a Republican budget that the Republicans sooner or later are going to have to compromise. They're going to have to negotiate with him. And so, in a sense, we're repeating the conversation that we just had about Democrats and President Trump about the funding for the wall. Sooner or later, for government to function, you've got to have a compromise. And I think some Republicans will say, oh, heck, it's okay not to have a budget. We'll just work on a continuation of last year's budget. But sooner or later, everybody will want something, and then they'll finally compromise.
We'll leave it there for now. Mordecai, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob.
That's Mordecai Lee, professor of urban planning at UW-Milwaukee and a former state lawmaker. We talked with him about the federal government partial shutdown, Elizabeth Warren running for president, other political stories at the state and national levels.